Hi, my name is Roy Carlin, and welcome to the show. I've also got Fight Podcast, The Awakening Podcast, Exposing Fraud and Corruption, but with Solutions, The Crypto Podcast, on the road, all things blockchain, NFTs, crypto, The Meditation Podcast, talking about all different types of meditation, but there's also meditations there from 1 minute to 2 hours. And the other one's the Learn Polish Podcast, so if you're interested in learning Polish, you can do that. And the other one is Speaking with Roy Colin, and I just have guests from around the world talking about either public speaking or also about their book or just general life in general. And you find everything on bio.link/podcaster. I'm also a podcasting coach, and you see the QR code there, and it's also on my link as well. And if you're interested in actually going on some podcast shows, I'm helping people doing that. Or if you're interested in sponsorship, you can contact me. And I'd like to thank my sponsor, danielpacker.com. He helps people with anxiety, stress, and addictions. He's got a 90% success rate, and you only pay if you're successful. So be sure to check him out, danielpacker.com. I hope you enjoy this week's show.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to Freedom International live stream. We are happy again to have you and in our conversation today. So, you know, if you are joining us today and in the future, remember to give a thumbs up, subscribe, and really share, okay? Because that's what's most important. And of course, when you can, go to those donate and support link buttons, especially for our guests. And so Hartmut of Go Your Own Path and Roy Colin, we're just really excited that we can gather from a distance online and we make AI our friends. But most of all, we're very fortunate and blessed that today we have Vanessa Billy. She is an award-winning journalist, and we've had it for several times. And we expect and we hope that, God willing, she will always be safe. She will always be able to speak up and really do her true journalism work, because she's one of the very few, maybe just a handful, or maybe even less, of journalists who breathes, lives, wakes up, sleeps journalism. You know, it's like, you know, how many cells do you have in our body, our skin? That's how I think of her. And it's really amazing that she's with us. I guess she has a serious purpose in life that she has to continue to be with us. So Vanessa Billy, thank you very much. And so do follow her, okay? And because what I've been doing for myself, instead of wasting my time in any TV station or even radio, or any podcast that doesn't resonate to truth, I go to her Telegram and I go to her Substack. So you can find her there, okay? You just, you know, make sure that you get that to billy.substack.com. And then definitely for any amount, you can go to the patreon.com/Vanessa Billy. And so thank you. And let's see, what else for Vanessa? So Vanessa, when I decided to have this topic, it's like, you know, technology is so fast, but then what's happening is faster than technology. So I don't even know where to begin to ask question, but I just wanted to use this platform for you. So it's just like you wake up and then just have us the news, have us the update. So I'll let you lead us this conversation as always, okay? Because this is really for our guests, and it's neither for Roy and for Hartmut. We, in our hearts, we want to make that platform. So welcome. And yeah, give us your update and let if any question that comes out of our brain and our critical thinking, then, you know, Hartmut and Roy could just interject and see what happens. So again, for our audience, please, really, at this many years now we've been doing this, join us and even create your own, because we need a lot of help for truth information. So thank you, Vanessa.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're absolutely right. It's kind of difficult to keep up with events, even being based here. I mean, tonight, for example, just to give you an idea, we're actually expecting, we were expecting it last night, we were expecting the retaliatory attack from Israel, because after the Iranian slap in the face for Israel, which came a few days ago, of course, with the multiple drone and missile strike on the occupied territories of Palestine, known as Israel. Whereas there is a lot of sort of backwards and forwards, and America is apparently trying to dampen it down. The UK is trying to say, let's not escalate. There are supposed deals being done between Egypt and Israel. I honestly don't really believe any of this sort of rhetoric that's going around at the moment. The US, the UK, and Israel, and Jordan, and the Gulf states are all on the same page. So whatever rhetoric you're hearing, fundamentally, in my opinion, living here, there's very little to be seen between them. And in our opinion here, speaking to people today, I had various meetings today. The general consensus that is that Israel is not going to hit Iran directly. I don't know if you've been following, but there's been a number of exchanges in the last few hours of Israel threatening to hit Iranian nuclear facilities, and Iran basically saying, well, if you do that, then we will reconsider our nuclear program. It will no longer be peaceful, etc. I'm slightly paraphrasing. And there have been some reports from Israeli media that, in fact, the Dimona nuclear reactor was slightly damaged and there were injuries at the Dimona plant. So, as always with all of these sort of pivotal events, you usually have to wait. Everybody always wants to rush and have their analysis within 24 hours. But I tend to be of the opinion, just wait a few days and then more information will start to come out. You will have a much bigger picture. So basically here in Syria, we're waiting for the retaliation because Syria is the regional punch bag. Whatever rows are going on between Iran and Israel generally, it's Syria that gets hit. I mean, since October the 7th, I think there have been more than 8 or 9 targeting of IRGC military advisors inside Syria assassinations, basically. So, the attack on the Iranian consulate building, which was part of the embassy compound, was really a step too far. Iran had shown remarkable restraint considering the previous attacks on its personnel, including an entire apartment building very close to the Iranian embassy and a number of other attacks in various sites inside Syria. And added to that, Israel had actually been increasing its violation of Syrian airspace. There was an attack about 2 days before the attack on the embassy where Israel actually through Jordanian airspace and then over the US military base in the southeast, Al Tanf, illegal military base. It entered Syrian airspace at low altitude and fired, I think, around 60 missiles into eastern Aleppo and western Aleppo at the same time as the terrorist groups led by Al Qaeda or dominated by Al Qaeda in the northwest were attacking western Aleppo. And this is something that we've seen for the last 12 years, is that Israel's aggression against Syria is very often in collaboration with attacks by the terrorist armed groups inside Syria, including ISIS, or when the Syrian Arab Army is advancing to retake positions that were occupied by the terrorist armed groups, sponsored, of course, by the West. So this is nothing new, but what we had seen even prior to the bombing of the consulate was an expansion of Israel's aggression in conjunction with the armed groups against the Syrian Arab Army inside Syria itself. So as I said, we're kind of waiting for a retaliation. It's not going to be one strike, according to the information that I received today. It's likely to be, a bit more theater, hitting a number of targets inside Syria, which will be labeled Iranian bases, Iranian weapons, Iranian military, etc. So that's really the situation we're currently in. I could go on forever, but I'd probably prefer that you ask specific questions. Otherwise, I'll just ramble.
Well, do you see any breaking point of these escalations? Because from the images that I saw, I saw this long, long line of people in Prague, people I think in Warsaw, they're trying to get passports. And of course, two days I think after what happened with Israel bombing the Iranian embassy, and then Iranian retaliates. It's like there were like many people at the airport trying to get out of certain countries or being ready. So I was wondering
Really?
if at some point can that, we want to stay positive, but if you have lived there for years and other people have lived this kind, and how do we really, do you see any bit of hope?
Well, I mean, I slightly don't understand why people would be leaving European countries or Western countries. I mean, where are they going to go? Look, Israel has been provoking, as I said, for years. And the question that I'm always being asked is, why doesn't Russia bomb Tel Aviv? Why doesn't Russia do this? Why doesn't Syria retaliate? Why? But the reality is that the resistance axis, which would include Hezbollah and other resistance factions in Lebanon, Syria as a state, but also the resistance factions that are operating from inside Syrian territory, which include the Islamic Resistance Iraq, IRI, the PMU, which is part of the Iraqi military now officially, but has been fighting against ISIS in Iraq and Syria since 2012. Yemen, of course, and Ansarullah. The resistance movement and the National Salvation Government Army, the official army, is actually the main faction which is leading the campaign to blockade the Red Sea for Israeli shipping or for any shipping that is heading towards Israel, which, of course, under the Genocide Convention, is entirely legitimate to prevent and punish genocide. And then, of course, you have Iran, you have Iraq, which as a state has never recognized the state of Israel and which has been pushing for the US occupation forces to leave. As you know, Syria in the northeast and the entire eastern sector actually is occupied by the United States, which is stealing Syrian oil and agricultural resources while, of course, imposing unprecedented sanctions on the Syrian people that have no access to their own resources, which is nothing less than a collective punishment, which again is a war crime. And so you have a situation where Israel has been wanting to expand this war for some time. To a degree, I think the US and the UK and members of the EU kind of play the game of trying to calm everything down. But in reality, this is their plan. Israel is not doing it in a way which is palatable to the voting public. The genocide in Gaza and in the West Bank has damaged the reputation of Western governments entirely. And so for that's the only reason that you're seeing some kind of pushback against Israel's sadistic savagery against Gazans and against the West Bank and the occupied territories. Are we going to see an expansion? I think you have to look at the optimism must come from the point where in the resistance axis, you have some very sane people. Contrary to how it's being portrayed in the West, where you always have, if you have a juxtaposition of images, for example, on a headline, you will have an Iranian shouting and the crowd screaming and so on, and you'll have Netanyahu on a phone. You know, so it's that's how it's portrayed in the West. But the reality is actually the inversion of that. The lunatics are in power in the West, under the control of the lunatics behind the throne, of course, and in Israel. What Iran and Hezbollah and all of the resistance axis has been trying to do is one, to distract Israel from an absolute annihilation of the Palestinian people by occupying them on different fronts. But they've restricted the expansion of that aggression and of that conflict. In the same way, if you look at how Iran actually responded, there were no civilian casualties. When Israel bombed the Iranian consulate, there were more than 10 civilians killed. Two friends of mine were horribly injured in the blast. They were just crossing the road. The attack happened at 5 p.m. During Ramadan. So people were getting ready for iftar. They were doing their shopping. They were rushing to go home to eat at around 7. It's like Oxford Circus in London, right? It's so busy. And as I said, two friends of mine were very badly injured. One is still in hospital. Her leg was completely shattered. This is what Israel does. Civilians are collateral damage for Israel, the US, the UK, EU states that support Israel and support the neocolonialist agenda in West Asia. The difference with Iran's attack is it targeted military bases. It didn't target an embassy. It targeted the intelligence center in the Golan occupied territories occupied by Israel, that was responsible for the surveillance, for the attack on the consulate. It targeted two air bases, Nevatim and Ramon, that from which the attack was launched with American planes and American bombs, of course. And so therefore, it was a tactical strike. It wasn't intended to do huge damage. Had Iran wanted to do huge damage, it would have launched another wave of missiles, because the drones were intended to basically educate Iran on Israeli, UK, US air defense capability and also positions, right? And then that was followed through by the missiles. Yes, you can argue now, I think it's at around 84% were intercepted. But they had 12 days to prepare. And Iran told them they were going to retaliate. They had 12 days to put aircraft carriers into position to prepare the aircraft inside Jordan to intercept, to prepare the air defenses and so on. That isn't going to happen again. Right. And as I said, this was one wave of an attack. Had Iran really wanted to do damage to Israel, there would have been two waves, three waves, four waves, because the air defense could not cope with that level of saturation. And if you look at the cost, I mean, conservatively, it's around 1.3 billion cost to Israel in air defense. Conservatively, with Iran, it was around 60 million. So, you know, while the West is kind of portraying this as some kind of loss for Iran, and they're focusing on the 99% intercepted, which is ridiculous anyway, it wasn't about damage. It was about strategy, tactics, and deterrence. And in my opinion, the deterrence has worked, because I've never seen politicians in the West look quite so freaked out when they're giving interviews. I mean, Rishi Sunak just looked like someone had injected him with something to speak. And for you know, Iran has been very, because Iran has never retaliated directly like this before. And I think the West believed that President Raisi was too moderate, that he wouldn't sanction something like this. Even here, we were surprised by the strength of the attack. And I think the other thing that it demonstrated, which again strikes fear into the heart of the neocons, is the unity of the resistance axis. Because there were drones coming from Hezbollah, there were drones being launched from inside Syria into the occupied Jolan territories. Yemen launched drones at the same time as Iran. Iraq, there were drones being launched. And this was a very strong message. This was saying, you don't only mess with Iran, you mess with all of us. And at the end of the day, the United States forces in the region are sitting ducks. I mean, I know now, in the last 24 hours, the US is starting to move air defense systems into the Northeast. It's preparing.
Yeah, thank you, Vanessa. And it, the way you explained it, it doesn't really take a genius to understand the situation. I really, it was a genius move. You know, and if I have to bring it to the local situation of every ordinary person, it's just like in when you're being bullied or when you're in school. You know, you do strategic things to not to harm the other person who's bullying you, but give that nudge that, you know, I can really hurt you bad. So that sometimes that's how I look at it and bring it down to a smaller scale for me to understand. So does. But then I keep imagining, and maybe you can be clear, describe more the situation that might be happening. Since there is this strong movement for the resistance, like the BRICS and what's happening with, you know, in spite of the sanction against Russia, but they're blooming a lot, and the same thing as what's happening with China. Those who wants to continue to control the hegemonic control that's been happening for decades, I think they really have to plan something much worse. So shall we just be ready that anything again can happen? And I thank you for this time. And after you share your thoughts, I'll pass it on to Roy.
I think what is also really interesting is that you've seen China and Russia come out publicly and very strongly calling out the hypocrisy of the West that didn't condemn the attack on the consulate, which violates the Vienna Convention of 1961. Effectively, it's Iranian territory. And the claim by Israel that, they were IRGC, they were military intelligence. So what? Every single British American embassy in the world has a CIA desk and a military intelligence desk within the embassy. I mean, that's obvious. It's still not justified. It's not enough of a pretext to strike what is effectively an embassy, right? And Vasily Nebenzia called this out very strongly in the UN. President Putin, who had a conversation with President Raisi, has come out strongly again and said that Iran had every right to retaliate. China has said something very similar. So you're seeing a very clear alignment of the non-aligned axis behind Iran. And this is also scary for Israel and for the West to see this this formation of a very powerful axis. I mean, you know, look at NATO in Ukraine. It's just, for whatever reasons it's doing it, it's absolutely depopulating Ukraine, sending them to their death for an utterly unwinnable war for NATO, even if they throw Poland into the war, even whatever they do now, it's lost, right? And we also have to remember that Biden is coming up for re-election. Rishi Sunak is desperately trying to delay election in the UK, but he can't delay it beyond January 2024. And I mean, in all honesty, who's going to re-elect them? And as many Iranians have said to me, who's going to invest in Israel right now? You know, half the world at least agrees that Israel is committing genocide real time for 6 months inside Gaza, and it hasn't stopped. You know, the only peace that Gazans had, I spoke to Gazan friends of mine in Rafah when Iran missiles were passing overhead here. And they said to me, Vanessa, you know, this is the first time in 6 months we can't hear drones and we can't hear jets and we can't hear bombs. They were celebrating. You know, for 5-6 hours, they had some respite. That's more than the ICJ, the UN, every single diplomatic institution has achieved in 6 months as a deterrent. That for me is what does that say to you? You know, our so-called peaceful, peace brokering even, institutions are null and void. I can't hear you.
Just because, I mean,
I'm just in agreement, Vanessa.
it's impossible to kind of know what's right because, you know, we see China's, you know, backing and Putin and all this. But the reality is, if we look what's going on in the world, you know, we saw people, I won't mention it because we don't want this to get taken down, but people were falling in China because of a certain thing, which we knew was a lie. And that was replicated across the world. We're seeing that every country is being infiltrated with, you know, asylum seekers, whatever you call them, refugees, but they're all military age men. In Ireland, which is similar to a lot, I know you're talking about the UK Prime Minister. Ireland hasn't got a political party. They've all been kind of shown their colours. Mm. To me, it looks like everything is orchestrated, that we're all focusing on this. There's cannon fodder. There's people getting destroyed, like your friend. It's horrible. But at the same time, they're pushing their agenda around the world. Like, it's like, it's very hard to know who's actually the good boys because, like, even if you look at Iran, like, previously, if you look at Iran years ago in the 70s, it looked like a European country and all that. And then that changed. And, like, what, like, you're based where, you know, you're in a dangerous place. I mean, like, I admire you that you're staying where you are. But, like, do you not see this is like being controlled by a higher level? Or am I totally wrong? Because like every time I think I know something, or even look at, say, like the likes of Joe Rogan or Patrick Bet-David, they're constantly planting seeds of what's coming. You know, they're kind of, and they're selective in their guests coming in.
I want to support you, Roy. Right. You want me to say something? So I have the same opinion like Roy, because for me, it's very strange. The whole thing with Gaza since the 7th of October is very strange. The problem is it's a very long conflict. Both sides hate each other. Unbelievable. And the point is, there was a time when the Israelis gave them 20 billions. Then they built the Gaza. Didn't invest in infrastructure. They invest in tunnels and et cetera. They have a special school system. Then there were the attack on Israel. And in my opinion, we have to make a difference between the time before we had the pandemic and the time after the pandemic. because we all got triggered with this clash, which is so old. But at the same time, on the 7th of October, technically something happened which is not possible. There are 7 security levels which Israel has in order to protect the borders. And one level is only the one guy is sitting in front of a computer and is looking straight on the screen. He's not allowed to look left and right. This is one level. They have 7. If there was a pig 100 meters away from the border, if there was a cat, red alarm bell.
I lived in Gaza, so I know what the security is like.
Yeah. And this is something what for me is strange, because technically it's nearly impossible what's happened. And the chief of the, let's say, inner service, military, and etc., they had a conversation 3 hours after the attack. And if something technically is not possible, then there must be a human failure or must be a human agreement.
So are you going with the Hamas-Israel conspiracy theory?
I go with this, yes. The problem is, was it Israel or was it Hamas? But the problem is, from a technical point of view, it's not possible what happened to this day. And this is something what we have to, what I see in this way. Yeah? Mm-hmm. And there is the gas field in the front of Gaza, the big one. Yeah. And we have also to accept that how can I say, the Hamas is not the Palestinian. This is very important. Yeah. Or the Hezbollah or whatever. But this, can you confirm or do you have the information that the Hamas has the tendency to bring their culture in the world? Or is this only a black, is this something idiotic? Because I think from a German point of view, in 2009, I read a report from the Three Letters, that in 2016 we would have a civil war in Germany. And now we have 2024. Mm. Our Ministry for Foreign Affairs makes advertisement or announcement in Arabic states in how they can come Arabic people to Germany, how easy it is to get a German passport. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, our Minister for Finance said that all the people who come to Germany can work for 3 years without paying taxes. And so the increasing of the Islamic people in Germany will increase rapidly and fast. And in New York, in synagogues, they sell already the Palestinian houses. They make real estate business. So the question is, is Israel willing to give the land back to the Palestinian, or is it more a solution that the Palestinians shall escape from Gaza, because now they are in the south, and they shall come to Europe? This is a theory. This is We are talking about strategies. Strategies are not said openly, and what I want to discuss with you is this strategy, and this is this conspiracy theory, whether everything is connected.
God. Okay, that's a massive subject. All right, let's start at the beginning. I'm not one of those that believes that the whole world is, every single world government is in on some conspiracy against humanity. Sorry. For me, this is just way too reductionist. and it doesn't take into account the complexities, the cultural complexities. I mean, I'm living in the Middle East. Trust me, CBDC and all of these talking points in the West has absolutely no importance here. Why? Because we have been living in the dystopia that is way beyond what the Western governments want to actually create inside their own countries. It's already been created here. In Syria, I can't access money. I have to leave the country to actually be able to access my money, right? So whatever people in the West are now freaking out about post-COVID, that's been the reality in the so-called global South for decades. Because the regression in your development in the West that is being imposed upon you by the oligarchy is exactly what the neocolonialists and the imperialists have been imposing on developing countries in Africa, in West Asia, in Latin America for decades, right? Yes. And if you, you know, I can only speak from personal experience. There are people inside Russia, sure, who pivot to the West and who are pro-Zionist. But there are also a large contingent in Russia that understand what happened with COVID. By the way, the COVID restrictions in Russia.
I don't talk about the COVID restrictions. I thought about.
No, but I'm actually kind of responding to Roy as well first, because you both brought in to kind of, you know, you kind of brought in China's reaction. Well, there is also a flip side to that. Look at the biolabs that were established inside Ukraine. Look at Ukraine. Look at the potential for genetic engineering, potentially, of viruses to target specific DNAs. I'm not a scientist, right? But this has been talked about explicitly in relation to Russia. To some degree, people have told me that in China, they almost assumed that this was a bio attack. Whatever China's response was, I didn't see China imposing the restrictions anywhere else. And this is the point. I mean, you talk about Iran and the culture. It was a culture like Europe. It was a culture like Europe, but there were massive detention and torture camps. I visited them myself. Yes, the Shah was with the West, but he absolutely persecuted people under his reign. And whether you agree or disagree with the Islamic revolution, whether you agree or disagree with society in Iran, it's up to Iran. And by the way, it's not up to Iran that is being targeted, just as Syria was, just as Libya was, just as Iraq was, by, for example, the entire Persian complex of media outlets that are run by the US and the UK deliberately to target and infiltrate opposition inside Iran. I went there for 2 weeks. I interviewed opposition. I interviewed students that were so confused with the information that was being given to them until I sat down with them for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, and then they started to understand what was happening. It's nothing different. This MO is what happens globally when there is a country that is non-compliant with Western agenda. And that agenda is not for the benefit of the country. I think historically we know that. So I guess I tend to look at things as that it's not my business what Chinese culture is like. It's not my business what Iranian culture is like. There are things here that sometimes are difficult for me to navigate as a Westerner, but it's not my place. This is their culture, right? This is a patriarchy. It's a patriarchal society. And that's how people thrive here. To try and impose some kind of Western ideology onto a country like Syria or Iraq or Iran or China or Russia is it's a hiding to nothing. Why aren't our countries, why aren't they promoting respect? Why aren't they promoting understanding, cultural understanding? I think you know why. But to come back to this idea that China is doing exactly what the West is doing, Russia is doing exactly what the West is doing, and they're all kind of in some kind of conspiracy against humanity. I just, maybe it's a little bit of my own optimism, but I don't believe it, because there are people in all those countries that I speak to on a regular basis who are completely aware what, and they abhor what the West is doing, by the way. The entire transgender movement, the entire appalling pedophilia infested education of kids in schools in the UK. That's the one that I'm most versed on, right? That's, people here would just think, what? Right? So I really struggle with this whole everyone's in on it together, because people here have other priorities. And right now, the priority, and this is where I come on to you a little bit, Hartmut, is the end of Zionism. Because Israel and the Zionist project is the cancer in this region. And it has been since the late 1890s. Let's not forget that in the late 1890s, even Jews were describing Zionism as another anti-Semitic cult. And the majority of Jews don't accept the state of Israel built on the Zionist principles, because the Zionist principles, just like Nazism, just like Al-Qaeda, just like every form of extremism that has been created by the West, cultivated by the West, incubated by the West, is based on supremacism, secular supremacism, white supremacism, racism. And that's what the Zionist project has been against Palestine for more than 75 years. It didn't begin in 1948 and the Nakba, it began before. And this was a project that was midwived by the British. We know about the Balfour Treaty and all of this, but it was effectively the dispossession of land from the Palestinians from the get-go. And Israel, the Jews had other alternatives. Argentina was one of them, for example, but they decided on Palestine. So coming back to the idea that this was some kind of collaboration between Hamas and Israel, I agree with some elements of what you said, but I disagree that it's impossible, right, to break through these defenses. And if you listen to even a military intelligence expert like Scott Ritter, if you listen to Alistair Crook, who was both in intelligence and in British diplomacy inside Israel, he pinpointed what you mentioned, this human error element, because they've become actually too dependent on AI, on high-tech security, but there still has to be a human decision at the end of the day, whether that information that is being fed to them is viable or not. And I think, as far as I remember, it's been admitted by Israeli intelligence that they made a mistake. They didn't act on the intelligence that they were processing. Now, I'm not saying this wasn't an event in order to, not really a false flag, but I'm not saying that Israel didn't benefit from this operation by the resistance factions. And by the way, there's 17 resistance factions inside Gaza alone, not only Hamas. It has been portrayed as the Hamas versus Israel war from the very beginning by Western and Zionist media. For that reason, they want you to forget about all the other factions, including socialist communists, the PFLP, including Christian factions, including non-Islamist factions. Okay, so it's been very much portrayed as this Hamas-Israel war. And I, my belief, based on what I've seen, what I've read, is that Israel sacrificed their own civilians when the attack happened, whether there was some kind of collusion or not. But regardless of that, they saw an opportunity to create the pretext to basically start the entire ethnic cleansing of Palestine. And they murdered their own civilians. This has been admitted by the IOF, both by helicopter, by tank, and they have killed hostages with the bombing inside Gaza also, right? So in my opinion, Israel took advantage of whatever the confusion, the situation was, to create the pretext, the atrocities, all of which have been debunked and discredited multiple times by multiple investigative reports, including the mass rape, including the beheaded babies, the burned babies. And by the way, I recently wrote an article about Israeli rape culture, and I seriously recommend that people read that, because if you really want to see to what extent the Israeli accusations are sheer projection, please read that article. Because from 1948, rape has been used by the Zionists as a tool of terrorization of the Palestinian population, and not only women, men, women, children, by women and men in the IOF. And rape has even, and harassment, sexual harassment, has also been an issue within the IOF itself. There have been mass cases of rape of female IOF reserves, etc., soldiers. There is a history of pedophilia in Israel, and a history of offering safe harbor to pedophiles from foreign countries, using, this is incredible, using the right of Jewish people to immediately come to Israel and settle, while Palestinian people whose land it originally was have no right to return. That for me is extraordinary. So Israel is a haven for pedophiles from the US, from the EU, and so on, and they're not prosecuted, Australia. And they, if even if they convert to Judaism, they have the right to go to Israel. Do you know how sick that is for me? Right? So this was coming at any point. And I think this was the point, because also we're reaching, if we want to go into the other paradigm of the end time evangelical Christians, the Christian Zionists, the Zionists themselves, that believe in an apocalypse, an Armageddon, in order for the second coming of Christ. They believe in the destruction of Al-Aqsa, the third holiest site in the world for Islam, in order to replace it with Temple Mount. Again, that's part of this prophecy of the second coming of Christ, which the majority of Jews, by the way, don't adhere to. They don't agree with this man-made environment for the second coming of Christ. But this is the ideology that drives much of what is happening now between the Zionists and the Palestinians, right? The ethnic cleansing of Palestine, it not only has its roots, as you rightly say, in the gas reserves, in the real estate, in the control, the absolute control of the territory of Palestine. I mean, Robert Kennedy Jr. made it very clear in an interview that he did, when he said basically quite openly, the importance of Israel is as a military bulwark for us in the Middle East. It has provided us with surveillance, with military interference, with espionage interference, with assassination interference, etc. And it is absolutely vital to the prevention of the rise of China and Russia and BRICS and Iran, and the control of all of the commodities by those countries. So there's multiple elements here. It's not only, you know, was it a conspiracy? I don't think so. And by the way, I also want to make the point, Hamas as it is now is not Hamas that it was even 5 years ago. Because you have to remember, I know that Hamas played a massive role in the destabilization of Syria, for example. Up until 2017, it was fighting with Al-Qaeda and part of the Muslim Brotherhood elements that were destabilizing Syria. But from 2017, when Saudi Arabia pretty much withdrew a lot of its funding, the normalization process with Hamas began, and it was brokered by Saeed Nasrallah, predominantly, and Iran. And in 2021, President Assad welcomed the new Hamas leadership to Damascus. Khaled Mashal, who was very much responsible for the Muslim Brotherhood Hamas role against Syria until 2017, has been very much sidelined. Even from my experience living in Gaza in 2012 and 2013, there was a huge difference between the political wing and the military wing. The military wing, the resistance wing, were just young guys from Gaza that were just fed up with seeing their you know, their wives, their kids shot in broad daylight in Gaza, which happened on a regular basis. I witnessed it myself, even during peacetime. And took up arms. And, you know, when you talk about the billions that were coming in, I'm also not denying that there was some corruption in Hamas at that time. But on the other hand, show me one government in the world that is not corrupt in one way or another, one. But two, in Gaza itself, it went from a very unruly area, very much governed by tribal factions, and very chaotic, actually, prior to Hamas. When I was living there under Hamas, 3 a.m., I could go out alone in the street and be perfectly safe, right? There was control. There was cohesion in society under Hamas. There were negatives, but there were also positives. And look at what Israel is trying to do now. It's trying to destroy the security structure in Gaza by assassinating police, by assassinating security officials that are not part of Hamas resistance, but are part of the societal fabric in Gaza. They are trying to coordinate humanitarian supplies from central Gaza, southern Gaza to the north, for example, and they're being assassinated. Why? Because Israel wants to create again this vortex of chaos and bring in the tribal factions to take over again like they were before, because chaos suits Israel. But in reality, what happened, the tribal factions refused, and then they were assassinated.
Yes, thank you very much for this point of view, because let's say it this way. I try to be very cautious between this conflict, because I have also friends in Israel, and and the situation is, I see what's going on in Gaza. Yeah, this is and for this reason, how can I say it, there is a rule in torture. If someone is, for example, tortured, or for someone is treated very badly, and then comes in another place in the position of power, he will treat other people badly. Yeah, and this is my theory, because I'm wondering why all the immigrants can live in 5-star hotels and get everything the best. Yeah, and you see all the advertisements. So now you see the criminal statistics increasing in Germany rapidly. We have three to four rapes a day, which we haven't had in Germany 20 years ago. Yeah, this is.
Yeah, but I would also, because I know I have Syrian friends living in Germany who have also suffered at the hands of those Islamists who are coming into Germany and are being given, as you say, preferential treatment. But what I would caution on here is, you know, the West and the EU, Germany, France, etc., Netherlands, UK, have sponsored these terrorists to go to Syria. They have trained them in Turkey. They have trained them in Syria, right? And so the blowback is coming from that. I'm not saying, I am saying it's the majority. I will tell you a story. When I think it was in 2016, I was invited to speak at the Geneva Press Club about the white helmets. This caused complete mayhem. I had almost every UN official associated with Syria demanding that I be completely boycotted. Funding was withdrawn from the Geneva Press Club. And I actually received warning about a week before that the terrorists in Germany in particular were coming by train, by bus, everything to basically break up the session, right? And to attack me if they could. So this immediately told me, okay, and also from friends of mine who are patriotic Syrians inside Germany have really suffered, really, really suffered attacks by these kind of Muslim Brotherhood elements that have been allowed back into Germany. So I guess my point is, I don't think you can sort of point the finger at Islamists per se or people of Muslim
faith. This is not the case. Yeah, the problem is, let's say, the immigration is taken as a weapon. It's used as a weapon.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Of course. And for example, it's also interesting that we in Germany, we have alone 2,800 mosques. It's a lot.
Yeah.
So everything will get structured. And the fear what we Germans have is that we will be that the history of Lebanon in the 80s will repeat here. This is what the Germans are facing. Or let's say the fear of the Germans.
I think it's not only Germany. I mean, we have the same issue in the UK, where you mentioned in Ireland.
Yes.
It's the and I think this, I think where I would say there are connections between what's happening in West Asia right now, for example, and the ruling predator class that are bringing in the various measures in the West. I mean, for example, if you look at the conglomeration of what I call kind of cuckoo states, like UAE, Bahrain, even Jordan now, which has always been a British vassal state, in my opinion anyway, Saudi Arabia, look at the investment in the Sinai in Egypt. Look at the connection between the hideous NEON program, which is basically a 5-minute city, 170 kilometers long, which is now extending into the Sinai. So this is where I do think there is a connection, but I think you have to look at it as multiple layers, right? I don't think you can sort of homogeneously say, yeah, they're all heading in the same direction. I don't actually think this is the case. But I think the refugee issue, is part of this. It's part of the destabilization of society. It's part of the breaking down of Western culture. Yes, I do agree that it's being weaponized in this way. I mean, look at France. France has, what is it? I think it's 10% population now is Muslim, right? And they are deliberately ghettoized, segregated, discriminated against largely, right, in France. I lived in France for 18 years. I mean, it's one of the most racist countries in Europe, in my opinion. And there was a journalist, Italian journalist, Oriana Fallaci, in the, I think it was in the 1990s or 80s, where she was actually prophesying this. She was saying eventually European countries will have their identity changed. Now, this is a very difficult subject to talk about, because as soon as you start talking like this, you're accused of being far right, right?
The point is, we have to, I see it I try to see it from a psychological point of view. Mm. And we all know that we live in an economical crisis. Mm. And that the hate of this economical crisis is increasing.
Mm.
Yeah, so it's only a question of time when the button is pressed or will be pressed, and all will go down.
Mm-hmm.
But so far, they increase the potential of the crisis.
Mm.
And the interesting thing is, in my opinion, for example, we have this week in Germany, everyone has the right to change his gender for 1 year. It's, we have this LGBT.
Is that why you're wearing a dress, Hartmut? Yeah.
And the problem is that this kind of culture,
yeah,
together with the Islamic culture, it doesn't work.
Mm.
Yeah. So this is the increasing of the clash between these two cultures. Yeah.
Yeah.
And war has, let's say I take the, a friend of mine has a specific opinion concerning Israel. Of course, he is pro-Israel. He is. But he said one thing to me. He said, for example, that the Israels and that the Israel bring 300 trucks per day to Palestine and Gaza. But 50% would be hidden, 20% would be given to the people, and 30% for the black market. I don't know whether this is true. But if it is the case, well, if it was the case, then this is, it is a weapon to traumatize people. And war has the positive effect, which is sarcasm, which is of course not. Yeah, I don't like this at all. That if someone is traumatized and has, let's say he gets a specific religion belief, that they will become very strong warriors, because the empathy is decreased. Mm. A war decreases, every kind of war or any kind of trauma decreases the level of empathy in people. In my opinion, also this, for example, the sexual act by itself is a act of violence which will be transformed by love, in the opinion of the alternative Chinese medicine. And if children are, in my opinion, it's my personal opinion, traumatized, they get a problem to increase empathy or to establish empathy. And this is something how I see it, that the people get less empathic, and with less empathy, people are better to control because they are more in fear.
Yes, I understand the theory. But this is interesting, because is he saying 300 trucks are coming in per day now?
Sorry?
Is he saying 300 trucks of humanitarian aid?
He said 300 trucks per day now.
No, nothing.
Nothing.
Okay. You only have to look at all the crossings and the protesters that are being paid. There's a very good short documentary by a journalist called Jeremy Lofredo for Grey Zone. He actually went with the Zionist protesters against the humanitarian aid and spoke to them. I really recommend that you watch that, because it's horrifying. And when we talk about lack of empathy, there's another, it's just gone out of my head. There's a recent documentary, I'll find it and I'll send it, talking about the indoctrination in Israel that begins in kindergarten, which is an indoctrination of hatred and dehumanization of Palestinians. On the contrary, I was in Gaza in 2012 during the Zionist aggression. And I can say, even before the aggression started, there was a 13-year-old boy, Hamid Abu Dagga, who was shot point blank by Israeli helicopters playing football outside his home. They just decided, okay, we'll shoot him. I attended his funeral, and I think it was around 6 months later, I came back to Gaza and I went to visit the family. And I remember sitting outside with the father. The mother hadn't been able to leave the home for 6 months. She was grieving to such an extent. And I remember asking the father, if you could say something to the pilot who killed your son, what would it be? And he had tears coming down his face. And all he said to me, I would just ask him, doesn't he have children? So when you talk to me about loss of empathy, I disagree 100% with Palestinians. If you speak to anyone who goes to the Palestinian camps in the occupied territories, Eva Bartlett, Fiorella Isabel has just been there. And I actually asked her this question tonight before I came on. Gaza, I'm speaking to friends now. They are still joking with me. They are still looking for peace. They don't hate. They don't hate. And even the children, it's like they have another dimension of spirituality and humanity in them. And honestly, I maybe you can find it in the Jews that survived the Holocaust. Maybe this also, you know. I agree with, unfortunately, the Zionists, and I'm not talking about the Jews in Israel, I'm not talking about the Christians in Israel, because ultimately they all lived side by side in the state of Palestine without any problem. I have an amazing thesis written by a young Jewish guy based on actual testimony from his grandmother and his great-grandmother about how life was before kind of 1917 onwards. And it's extraordinary. It's a beautiful thesis, actually. But when you look at the inhumanity that is being displayed by the Zionist forces inside Gaza, I'm sorry, it's very difficult to see how these people ever had empathy. Because I when you can,
you actually routine. Just on that, Vanessa, because you, it was an interview that I saw, and I think it's worth actually letting the people know, where there was two Palestinians on the beach, and it was horrific to actually watch. You might just let people know, but, and there was another one where they were carrying the bodies, but there was two guys with the white flags, and I know it's terrible to hear, but I think people actually need to understand this, because you know you're a fantastic journalist. I wish to, unfortunately, like the likes of CNN, BBC, and RT, and all these, they don't have journalism. You know, and I mean, like most, all the conversations that we've had and previous shows and everything, I constantly learn from you, which I wish I was learning. You know, you're an incredible. But you might just let people know about that, because, like, just to show how harsh it is, and just the way that the way it went down, to realize how horrendous this is.
Okay, well, I mean, I'll mention three things that I think are absolutely indicative of the sadism of the campaign that's being waged against Palestinians inside Gaza and in West Bank. But West Bank, to some degree, is more open. Gaza is an extermination camp right now. There's no escape from Gaza in any direction. One is the creation of a kill zone, where effectively, you know, this is also nothing new. I mean, you mentioned the security measures, right? Even when I was there in 2012, they have automatic gun turrets set all along the fence and the wall that contains 1.5 million people inside Gaza. The distance at which those guns will be triggered can be changed every week. They can be changed from today to tomorrow. So the farmers and the children working or playing in this land never know when those guns are going to be set off. So they never know where that red line is. So 1 week it can be 500 meters. So they play at 500 meters, right? The next time it can be extended. And so they're playing in an area and the gun will shoot them. This happens on a regular basis. So this is one, even before they created the kill zones inside Gaza. You have the like the flower massacre, where hundreds of people like literally stormed one of the few aid trucks that is coming in that was actually, this was organized by Israel. And there are many, including myself, is that it was sent in as bait to entice the young men, because it's the young men in the families that will usually do this, you know, go and try and fetch the humanitarian aid. Of course, now they're getting killed in huge numbers. But it was mostly young men who stormed this truck and who were massacred by tanks, by air, by drone, and so on. They were massacred. Shifa Hospital, which was under siege for, I think this time, for the fourth time, for more than 2 weeks, they're still uncovering mass graves. And injured Palestinians, there's footage of this. Their bodies were literally crushed under the tracks of bulldozers. Women, medical staff were being sniped inside the hospital. Inside the hospital. Children, I think it was 13 children, were sniped at Shifa Hospital. And I'm sorry, but when you see bodies that are literally burst open by bulldozer tracks, this is even beyond what the Nazis did. Stripping women naked in front of men in a Muslim culture, this is exactly what the Nazis did to the Jews. It's about humiliation, it's about torture, it's about absolutely reducing this human being to nothing. And if they say anything, they shoot them. How many videos are there of people? I think the one that broke my heart was a little boy or a young boy, about 10, 11, carrying a white flag, and they shot him. And his brother tried to reach him to save him. They shot him. And the image of the two boys literally just embracing each other with the white flag in front of them. You know, this level of cruelty is not normal. I mean, when we talk about empathy, this is so devoid of empathy. It's something beyond. I even asked myself, what did they put in the vaccine? Because I mean, Israel was the most aggressively vaccinated country in the world. What did they put in the vaccine that just turned their brains into these monsters, savages? You know, and the problem is that this is being relayed to us real time, minute by minute, hour by hour. It's impossible to avoid it. And the thing is, I'm also speaking to friends of mine there, who many of them are so traumatized they can't even describe to me what they've seen and what has happened to them. You know, a dehydrated old man who can't keep up with the crowd when they're forcing people out of Gaza City to the south, and they shoot him because he's trying to get a drink of water. And then they will take photos of them giving water to an old lady, and the next shot is she's dead.
Can you also give us a statement with respect to the statement that the Hamas, or the political groups in Gaza and in Palestine, are killing their own people.
This absolutely is also not. Okay, if Hamas were killing their own people, why is there still huge support for the resistance inside Gaza? Wouldn't they be turning against them? Wouldn't inside Gaza against the resistance faction? When they brought out the Israeli hostages in one of the exchanges, what did you see? Did you see the people throwing stones at the Islamic resistance, the Islamic jihad? They were hugging them. What you need to understand is they are not removed from the people of Gaza. They live among them. The armed resistance is from the people of Gaza. And as I said, it's not only Hamas. Resistance within Palestinians is something they are born with. Because when you are born into a society where you live in complete apartheid in the occupied territories, when you can be imprisoned in military jail with no trial, with no lawyer, as a child, right? When you can be tortured, when you can be used as a human shield, and yeah, it's, again, I've written extensively about this, the accusation of Hamas using human shields. Well, wait a minute. Tel Aviv, the majority of the military bases are right in the middle of residential areas. It's just Hamas doesn't have warplanes. Hamas doesn't have, multiple warhead missiles in order to target these areas really effectively. And that's another point that I want to make is that Israel, even against really a poorly equipped resistance in relation to the billions, to the 19 billion budget, military budget that Israel has per year with weapons supplied by the US. And again, I want to make the point, when I was there in 2012 and when finally we had a ceasefire and Israel broke the ceasefire, that night, it was like hell on earth. It was like a test ground for every weapon and every aircraft that the US had supplied to Israel. It was like an inferno. And I even saw one CBC journalist who was a seasoned war correspondent who came back to the hotel where we were all staying and on the roof, and he was shaking. I said, "What's wrong with you?" He said, "These guys are psychotic. They're psychotic." They chased his car, press car, for about half an hour, just shadowing it with the jet, with missiles primed. He's a foreign journalist, Canadian, probably semi-pro-Israel, you know. They don't care. They killed their own. They killed the, the Working Central Kitchen, the WCK. This organization was actually put into Gaza by Israel to supplant UNRWA. They killed their own people. Why? Because after this, guess what? All the aid organizations that were sending the ridiculous shipments from Cyprus stopped.
When you said that you experienced the spirit, a specific spirituality in the people of Gaza and Palestine. Mm-hmm. I remembered a guest of us here, who was Alexander Bogdanov from St. Petersburg, and mm-hmm. he told us about the people in Donetsk and Luhansk.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is these are miners, and the miners are have a specific character, like the old sailors mm-hmm. from the 17th century. If you're on a ship in the 17th century, you don't know whether you will live. Whether you will live on the next day. And for this, and this kind of people, they have the resistance in themselves. They are the resistance because they enjoy every day.
Yeah.
Because they give a F. U C K for the opinion of someone else.
Yeah, exactly. And this is, I mean, if you look now, there's still pictures of weddings in Gaza. they were still trying to celebrate Eid, despite the, you know, horrendous massacres still ongoing. When I speak to my friends, they're still kidding with me. And this amazes me. You know, they still have a sense of humor. One friend, I've told this story earlier today also, like he smokes a lot. He used to smoke about 4 packs of cigarettes a day. He said, Vanessa, it's a disaster. I have 1 cigarette per day because it costs, 1 cigarette costs $4. He's laughing with me, you know, while the world is collapsing in on them, basically. And when you spoke about the evacuation, sorry, I kind of didn't come back to that. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, Israel has made very clear, I think, more than 500 statements, basically, of genocide have been made by military officials, political officials, Knesset officials, etc., since October the 7th. 500. So it's very clear what they want. You know, Ben-Gavir was just saying yesterday that he will bring back the death penalty to basically get rid of the 8,000 prisoners, by the way, Palestinian prisoners that are in Zionist jails, many of them without charge. When we're talking about hostages, 8,000. There were 6,000 before the 7th of October. There's now upwards of 8,000, maybe more. Right. And he's now talking about the death penalty to get rid of them because it's inconvenient having 8,000 Palestinian hostages.
We have also put in consideration that we live in the time of AI.
Yes.
And if the war was only for the destruction of Hamas, with AI, you can see exactly where who is where, and they can see how many people are in the place. They can see how many children are in this building.
Yeah. I mean, what is it? Lavender. It's love. There's three, isn't there? There's the gospel, lavender, and wonderful daddy's home. Why is it called daddy's home? Because when daddy comes home to his family, they target the entire house. So they don't only kill what is supposed to be the Hamas operative, but like, for example, the lavender AI, this can be based on very, very loose connections. Like if they change their mobile phone, if they're on a WhatsApp group chat and there's another resistance fighter on the group chat, all of them can be targeted.
Right. Yes.
You know, so it's not about, and people keep talking about 33,000 dead. In my opinion, it's way more than this. Way more. Because there are tens of thousands still under the rubble. And by the way, the building of the so-called humanitarian pier, this will be built with the bones and the bodies of Palestinians. Because the rubble they took has not been searched. They have the bulldozers, by the way, to build the pier that will eventually, in my opinion, be an American military base in this area and will have control of the gas fields. So they have the bulldozers for this. They have the air defense to protect Israel against an Iranian attack, but they don't have the air defense to protect Palestinians from genocide. You know, we live in a completely upside down world sometimes. It's very difficult.
I saw a video on Instagram in which a Jew, or let's say a Zionist, I have to be careful, said made a very interesting statement. He said, we have to make sure that the Muslims and the Christians will never come together or never join together, because this would be the end of Zionism.
It would be the end of the world. This is the end times prophecy. So he's a end timer, as I call them.
Yeah, and for this reason, and when I saw this statement, I say, yeah, it makes sense.
But actually, it's already happening. And Yoav Gallant said in December, just before Christmas, he said, we have to win this war to survive in the region. And this is the point. It's an existential war.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Entirely. But the problem is the existential war is also now inclusive of the entire region, or at least the resistance axis within that region, that have also been subjugated by the neo-colonialists for decades.
So you think also that it's do you think that how can I say? Is it more the purpose of the money with respect to the gas, or is it a combination of the profit and of the taking the chance to get rid of the Palestinians in this area so that Jews can live there? Because so far the people in Israel, they think that Palestine will still for the Palestinians. Interesting. In Germany, for example, we had a Congress here, and for the two-state solutions, and this was completely, let's say, more or less destroyed. 2,500 people should go in this Congress, and only 250 were allowed because of failure with respect security of the house. Mm. And 900, or I think 700 or 900 police officers were involved, or more.
Right.
And then during the Congress, the police interrupted the Congress completely.
Mm.
Yeah. And it's and so you can see that the discussion about a two-state solution, no one wants that.
Well, the two-state solution, even if you go back to 1936, I think it was, and the Peel Commission report, even back then, it was considered non-viable, largely, because of, you know, when under the UN mandate, suddenly Palestine has the majority of its best agricultural land and geographical advantageous land given to, not to the Jews, but to the settlers, the European Jews that had been coming in since the early 1900s, and of course exacerbated by the Holocaust and by the Second World War and so on. Two-state solution, like how can it work? You know, if you go back to the 70s and under Ariel Sharon, if you listen to Daniela Weiss, when she talks about under the instructions of Ariel Sharon, she was, I think she's still head of the kind of settler organization. The settlements were designed to break up the Palestinian land into sort of completely isolated communities, which would then be basically under military rule. So they're effectively occupied. And then put on top of that the apartheid, the oppression, the summary execution, the extrajudiciary executions, torture, etc. And that has been expanding since October the 7th. I think there's something like 700 new settlements proposed. And we've seen video images of armed settlers. They've been given weapons by Ben-Gavir and by Likud and by Netanyahu's extremist far right wing coalition in order to carry out attacks against Palestinian communities. And they've been doing this since October the 7th. So there is no desire for a two-state solution. None.
So, but this means at the end that 1 million people have to leave.
I don't think that's gonna, what, from Gaza?
Yes.
Yeah, but it's not only Gaza. Also no, in West Bank.
The question is, do you think that the Palestinians have still a future in Gaza and in Palestine?
Excuse me, Hartmut, since you brought that question, Vanessa, let me share some of the comments and questions because that is related to what Hartmut you just brought up, okay? Mm-hmm. So, and it's up, and I'll, Vanessa, however you want to respond, it's fine. So I said, war is hard, and these are continuing comments. War is horrible, and there are atrocities in both sides. How can the two different ideologies exist? History has shown us that this has always been a problem when one wants to dominate the other. Then if the countries that people are migrating from would make their country a welcome place to live, then there would be no reason to migrate. Their own countries are not providing for their own people. And what do you think about interviews, the interview with the son of Hamas founder?
Oh. Who,
you know, anyway, I have and has left to speak up. And I believe his name is Musa Hassan.
Yeah, I know him. I know
anyway,
him.
Go ahead. Yeah. Share.
Okay, let's start with him. He's been working for Shin Bet since, I think, before 2007. I really don't pay much attention to him. He's drugged up most of the time, in my opinion. He participated, I think, in the incarceration of his own father. He provided the intelligence information to Shin Bet. So he's clearly an agent of Zionist intelligence agencies. From my perspective, I wouldn't give his opinion. And very early on, actually, he was recommending the gassing of Palestinians. So I don't have an awful lot of opinion about him. You know, it's up to people what they watch, but me personally, I would never give him the time of day. He's crazy. It's absolute nonsense to say that these people can't live together, because if I, as I said, if you looked at Palestine pre-1900, Jews and Christians and atheists and Muslims lived together very peacefully, thank you. And that's why the majority of Palestinian Christians, and in fact, the Mizrahi, what are known as the Middle Eastern Jews, are very much discriminated against, just as the Palestinians are and just as the Christians are inside the state of Israel, that in my opinion is a completely artificial construct. It's a settler colonialist project established by the British. And Zionism, as I said, in the late 1900s was described by Jews as another anti-Semitic cult. The huge majority of Jews, activists that are actually marching pro-Palestine, see Zionism as anti-Semitic. So we're not talking, we're talking about resistance against a neo-colonialist supremacist entity. We're not talking about resistance against Jews per se, because Palestinians don't have a problem. Not Palestinians, Muslim Palestinians don't have a problem with Christian Palestinians or with Jewish Palestinians. In my opinion, what we have to do as peacefully as possible is to completely dismantle the Zionist project. It has, and our countries have to be de-Zionized. The British government is completely captured. I've been doing a series of reports on this, completely captured by Zionist entity, industry, tech. You mentioned AI. Look at the 2030 in the UK, between the UK and Israel, it's terrifying. Israel will have a footprint in every single sector of British society, from health to security to education. I personally don't want that. Who do my politicians represent in the UK, in the US? The majority will protect Israel over their own national security interests. People need to be aware of this. Why do Congress people have to sign an oath of allegiance to Israel that Cynthia McKinney refused to sign? And for that reason, she was targeted by the Zionist lobby. for the entirety of her time in Congress. So, you know, when we're talking about people hating each other, one, Palestinians don't hate, but they believe in their righteousness, in their right to justice, and their right to end apartheid. Nobody complained about it in South Africa. It's not about hate between people. It's about ending what is a cancer in this region. I can't describe it any stronger than that. I'm sitting here tonight waiting for Israel to bomb. And this is a regular occurrence. Almost every 2-3 days we're woken up by air defense. We're not at war with Israel, but Israel is at war with us here. Israel is funding the terrorist groups here. And if we go back to the Clean Break Doctrine of 1997, which was a paper commissioned by Netanyahu, which totally lays out the strategy of Israel, which is to basically destabilize the entire region, to divide and partition the region so that Israel effectively has control of the region. Look at the map of Greater Israel. I'm not saying all of these are set in stone, but from looking at the history of this project and what it has done in the Middle East and what it has facilitated and enabled in the Middle East, you can understand it's toxic to the Middle East. I don't know if that answered everything.
It's perfect. Temporary ending for our conversation. I can't even ask you, do you have anything more to say? Because it's just perfect, perfect ending. So thank you very much. But do invite our audience and, you know, future audience on where they can follow your work. And Vanessa, I just attended a live stream with Duran and Brian Berletic, and the audience specifically requested to have you there. So I just want to know that. They said, please invite Vanessa Billy. So that's how much important Vanessa's voice must be disseminated and heard, okay? But anyway, go ahead and please invite the people while I post all the other information.
I think the easiest one is Substack. Telegram and Twitter, YouTube, I guess I'm still on there. And UK column, I do a regular weekly news program with them. So that's everything, I think.
Yeah, I like all of that, the UK column. And maybe next time we'll talk about the Telegram when he just had his first interview in the Telegram.
Yeah. Okay.
I suddenly like more to be in the Telegram. Anyway, Vanessa Billy, take care of yourself and thank you. And yes, as the three of us are staying in our quiet environment, Vanessa is right there where anything can happen. So make sure you include her in your good thoughts and prayers, whatever you believe in. It will be helpful. And remember, thumbs up, like, subscribe our channel and everyone's channel here and all the things where you could, you know, include us in your in this freedom movement, or let's say the truth movement, okay? And even there, we got to be careful too. Take care, everyone. And what else can I say? Just be careful and do your critical thinking, because then it will really not lead you to any kind of false information, okay?
Yeah.
Take care.
Take care. Thanks, guys. It was lovely to see you all again.
It was a real pleasure.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Be sure to give us a thumbs up, 5-star rating, and share with your friends. And you'll find all my shows with the QR code or bio.link/podcaster, as well as my podcast coaching. And I'd like to thank my sponsor, danielpacker.com, helping people with anxiety, stress, and addictions. He's got a 90% success rate, and you only pay if you're successful. Also, if you'd like to go on a podcasting tour, I can help you do that. And if you're interested in sponsorship, you can contact me on my bio.link/podcaster. Until next week, take care.